12-ounce sports. Quench your sports thirst. Articles, live shows, and podcasts. Visit 12ozsportsradio.com. 12-ounce sports is your home for the best live talk shows, sports broadcasts, podcasts, and sports articles. You know you can catch 12-ounce sports live on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, but now you can also watch live on Zingo TV. That's right, Zingo TV has added 12-ounce sports to their long list of channels. And now if you're on your smart TV, just download the app and flip to channel 761 to catch all the live 12-ounce sports programming plus replays. All you gotta do is download Zingo TV and use the promo code 12OZ when signing up. It's that simple. Be sure to check out our latest blogs and podcasts as well at 12OZSportsRadio.com. It's 12-ounce sports now live on Zingo TV, channel 761. It's episode 166 of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast, and our special guest is Kevin O'Boyle. Kevin is the managing editor of the Brookville Star in Western Montgomery County, a sports broadcaster with a plethora of experience, and an official scorer and stringer for the Dayton Dragons. We're talking local sports from a New York native's perspective on episode 166. Welcome to the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast with Lee W. Mowen. This is a weekly podcast covering all sports in Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio. From Lima to the Ohio River and northern Kentucky, from eastern Indiana to Madison County and all points in between, this is your source of local Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio sports. Visit the LeeWMowen.com/podcasts to find your favorite podcasting platform. Music created with the Splash app. Time for another episode with your host, Lee W. Mowen. Back again with a new episode. It's episode 166 of the Cincinnati Dayton Sports Podcast, and I'm joined by my co-worker at the Dayton Dragons and good friend, Kevin O'Boyle. Kevin, great to hear from you. And as you mentioned before the call began, it'd be nice if we were working at Day Air Ballpark. I still can't get used to Day Air Ballpark yet, but yeah, we would have worked the 2020 baseball season together. But
yeah, it would have been nice, but unfortunately, things have come up that we can't do that. But looking very much forward to the day when we can be back working there again, Lee.
Here's hoping for 2021. It doesn't look like we'll have any minor league baseball for this year, but it looks like Major League Baseball is on its way with spring training in summer starting July 1st, and late July we'll have a first of 60 games. So definitely looking forward to that. But let's begin the interview. Kevin, where are you from?
Well, I'm from the beautiful upstate New York community of Binghamton, New York, which is right along the New York-Pennsylvania border on Interstate 81. But I've been in Ohio now since 1987.
And how did you come to make your way to Ohio from upstate New York?
Well, my sister married a gentleman from Kettering, and they located here in the Dayton area after they got married. And I really did fall in love with this community coming out to visit her. And the late summer of 87, I made the decision to relocate, and I've not regretted it one bit.
Kevin, when did you decide you wanted to be a sports writer and a broadcaster?
Well, when I first entered high school way back in 1976, yes, I am quite old, I had thoughts of being an architect and took, some drafting classes and whatnot in high school. But the math involved with that kind of deterred me from doing that. But my dad was a big sports fan, loved football, et cetera. We, you know, always went to Yankee Stadium every summer for games, would watch, you know, Yankee games on TV, NFL games, college, you name it. And I really liked the way that Kurt Gowdy, former broadcaster on NBC, did the NFL, the game of the week on NBC for baseball. I really enjoyed the way he broadcast games. And, you know, like some people say their sports hero or, you know, Mickey Mantle or Derek Jeter or whatever, my sports hero was Kurt Gowdy. And when I realized that being an architect was probably not going to be in my future, I then set my sights on becoming a sports announcer.
What was your first big break in either field?
First big break, I was a junior in high school at Binghamton Central High School, and we had a club, it was called the Audio Visual Club. And one of the things they did were tape the boys' basketball games. Now, that was used by the basketball coach to review that previous game, etc., much like, you know, game film used for sports. But I asked the advisor for that group if they ever thought of, you know, having someone broadcast the game while they were taping it. And I got to do the very first boys game of my junior year. That was way back in 1978, early December 1978, and did that. However, that was the only game I ever got to do with that entity because they didn't do any more taping of basketball games after that point. So that was my break into it. And then the next year, I started my own recording, if you want to call it, of the boys' games at Central. Plus, I started doing the PA announcing for the girls' basketball games for their home games at the school. So that's how I got started in it.
How about when you made the move to Dayton, Ohio back in the late 80s?
See, my first job in journalism, I was the sports editor at the Urbana Daily Citizen. Started there January 1988, which was great because not only did I get to learn on the fly, basically, of how to be a writer and sports editor at a daily newspaper. It was 6 days a week. But I also was able, in addition to covering the high school scene, and we had a local four-year college in Urbana University, covered all their games. During the summer, I was able to get down to Riverfront Stadium and cover the Reds. Got to go to two opening days with the Reds in 88 and 89. And then in the fall of 88, I covered the Cincinnati Bengals. In addition, I also did Ohio State because we had a young man, Rob Rogan, who was from Urbana, who played linebacker, started as a freshman at Ohio State. That was John Cooper's first year. But that year, you recall, and I'm sure you do, 88, that was the year that the Bengals went to the Super Bowl for the second time. So that was a lot of fun being able to cover that team.
And that was the last time the Bengals made it. Hopefully, you know, with Joe Burrow coming in and many of these fixes they'll do over the past few or past next seasons, maybe another Super Bowl's in the cards for Cincinnati. But it's been a while for the Bengals, hasn't it?
Now, it's been a long while. And I will tell you, there were some characters on that team, but also a lot of guys that were great to work with. And I'll say this, that if you enjoy Chris Collinsworth calling NFL games now in the Sunday nights, he was a writer's dream interviewing him after a Bengals game. That guy, he was witty, funny, and very analytical in his commentary.
When did you get your first broadcasting opportunity in the Dayton area?
Well, it was funny. First broadcasting opportunity was through some course of some events. I lost a job in Urbana, got the job, a job writing with Bowling Mormon newspapers. And in January of 1990, I was named editor at the Enon Messenger. And one of the assignments was to do the cover sports and for Green and High School. And they didn't have anybody doing the PA for the girls' games. They did for the boys, but they didn't have anybody doing for the girls. So I approached the AD out there, Bill Hill was his name, and asked him if I could do it. And I did, and I combined that about a year or so later with doing the boys' games as well. And that was my first broadcasting or announcing opportunity in sports in the Dayton area.
From your time starting off at Binghamton Central to now, what are some of the sports that you've covered, either as a writer or a broadcaster or a PA announcer?
Let's see. Of course, the major four, football, basketball, baseball, and hockey, being my favorite. I was very fortunate. I played for one season while I was in college at the University of Scranton, where I went to college. Play the sport of hockey. I've also have covered auto racing and broadcast auto racing as well with the old Time Warner TV channel. And I've also covered from a writing standpoint, gymnastics, wrestling, tennis, golf, cross country, track and field, a lot.
And don't forget about indoor football as well.
And indoor football. Yes, I forgot. Well, indoor football and indoor soccer, too. Dayton Dynamo.
That's right. Back in the late 80s and 90s until 95 when they moved to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk a little bit about auto racing, because that's something that's not touched upon in this podcast a lot. What's that like, broadcasting it and writing about it?
Well, writing about it and broadcast, you know, of course, two different things. I don't have a lot of experience from a writing standpoint, although I did go to races at Shady Bowl Speedway when I was with the Urbana Citizen. But broadcasting was really cool because when I was doing that, Time Warner TV and Kilcare Speedway and then Shady Bowl, about a year or so later after was able to do the first one on Kilcare, they did or hosted events in the old ARCA series, which was a minor league stepping stone to guys that had any thoughts of going on and racing in NASCAR. And I don't know if you remember the name of a local race car driver from Springfield, Bobby Bowser. Great guy. Very shy, I might add. Had a chance to interview him a couple times, but very good guy. And what was really exciting was the fact that being local, you know, Kilcare located, Xenia and Beaver Creek area, and Springfield just down the road, the very first race that I got to call of doing ARCA for Time Warner TV, Bobby Bowser won that race. Wow. He pitted late, took on fresh tires, and then passed everybody to take the lead late in the race. And let me just say that the roar from that crowd was unbelievable. But I also know, too, that we had to broadcast from atop the roof at the scoring tower and climb up the thing on a ladder about 20 feet up to the roof. That was interesting, but great perspective to watch the race from. So
almost like the Panthers Peak at Twin Valley South's high school gymnasium. I don't know how much or how tall that ladder is, but once you get up it, it's a beautiful view. But that's got to be something really cool, because a local Springfield native wins a race in the local area. I mean, yeah, that's a great story in itself.
Yeah, he was a good guy, and you know, he had visions, I think, of one day making it to NASCAR. Unfortunately, never had that opportunity, but it was cool. Now, I will state that it was one thing to do a stock car event. Quite another, we did a sprint car event for the old Neymar's midget series. And let me just say that even on that 3/8 mile oval at Shade at Kilcare, I almost said Shady Bowl by accident, those cars went around there very quick. And it, it was a real challenge to be able to do that.
I imagine. Did they did they ever reopen Kilcare, or is that closed forever?
I don't know about forever, but it is closed. Unfortunately, the only local Dayton area track where they run is Shady Bowl. I do know they do at Eldora, which is up a little bit further north. Unfortunately, I've never been there. And the track is owned by my favorite race car driver of all time, Tony Stewart. So I would love to one day get up there and meet Tony.
That's right. I mean, when you have a big star in NASCAR like Tony Stewart owning a track in the Miami Valley, that's pretty awesome. And it's something that, you know, I don't know how many sports fans around here know about.
No, and one day I'll get up there to see a race from Eldora, but haven't been able to get there yet. So,
talk to me about the other sports that you covered. I mean, you pretty much listed all the ones I could think about, but track and field, wrestling, I heard. Tell me some of the great stories, the great matches, and just the great stories you were able to write up in your time.
Well, one story that you just said that come to mind wasn't a story that I wrote. Rather, it was a photograph I took at a regional track and field meet, and it was at the track complex at Milton Union High School in West Milton, and covered four high schools in Champaign County, Urbana, Graham, West Liberty, Salem, and Triad. And I was doing the, I think it was the lower division. It was the girls hurdles race, the 100 meter hurdles race. And I, you know, positioned myself near the start finish line where I get a look going back up the track. And I was very fortunate to catch one of the runners from Triad as she was clearing a hurdle, a bubble. She was chewing bubble gum, and she blew a bubble right as she went over the hurdle. That was a cool. Now, I will state it was cool. It was nice. It did turn out a little bit blurry, but still in all, that was kind of a neat thing.
I mean, hey, when you have runners going that fast, and back then I'm not sure how well cameras were able to catch sporting events like that, but still, that's pretty cool.
Yep, that it was. And the coach for Triad High School wanted a copy of that because he was always telling that girl, "See, I told you do that. You shouldn't do that. It interferes with your breathing." And had photographic proof.
This is you running track. This is you running track while chewing gum. Any questions?
Yeah.
Kevin, what?
Anyway.
What sports season do you look forward to the most? You cover a lot of stuff, and like me, you work year-round. What's your favorite sports season and why?
Well, I'm going to say I have two favorites. You know, nothing against football. High school football in Ohio is like none other in the United States. Now, I never experienced it in Texas or Florida, and I've heard it's big there. You know, my home state of New York, high school football is big, but not near the way it is here in Ohio. But my two favorites are the winter because of hockey and summer because of baseball. I have been an almost near lifelong baseball fan. I started following baseball in the summer of 1969. Of course, that was the year of the Miracle Mets. And my dad told me after I rooted for the Mets to win that World Series that in his house were Yankee fans. And then after that, we started going to Yankee Stadium. So that wasn't a bad trade-off, I don't think.
No.
But But hockey, of course, because that's a sport that I played growing up and played in college, and have had the wonderful opportunity to have been able to be the broadcaster for two minor league pro teams here in the Dayton area, the Bombers and the Gems. So,
talk to me about your experience with the Dayton Bombers and Gems.
Well, Dayton Bombers, it, like I said, I was broadcasting with Time Warner TV, and the producers, directors told me they were going to start doing the Gems games, and they needed somebody to provide color. The main play-by-play announcer was going to be Gary Lowe, who was the radio broadcaster for the Bombers at the time. Now, mind you, this was in the early 90s at Hare Arena, and I did the color analysis of those games, and in the very next season, Gary was let go. The Bombers did not have a radio broadcasting deal that last year they played at Hera, and I was able to be moved into the play-by-play seat and followed the Bombers over to the Nutter Center and did them for a couple of years. And then in the 2000-2001 season, I was able to be the radio broadcaster for the Bombers and got to travel around the country. And I will state that having been able to broadcast professional hockey and travel with the teams, I have seen places in this great country of ours that I know otherwise I probably would have never been able to see, and including probably my favorite place that I visited was Rapid City, South Dakota, and got to visit Mount Rushmore.
Very nice. And that was during, was that during the Bombers days, or is that the Gems?
That was the Gems, and the Gems played the Rapid City Rush in the first round of the playoffs, and that would have been the 2010-2011 season. So that we visited out there in South Dakota in late March, early April of 2011.
So you got to see the Bombers when they were closing out their era at Hare Arena and making the move to Wright State University's Nutter Center. What was the switch like?
Well, I know that there's a lot of people that have emotional attachments to Hare Arena just because that's where hockey was born in the Dayton area back in the 60s. And the crowds at Hare were great. Unfortunately, there were circumstances that authored in the Bombers moving from there to the Nutter Center. And unfortunately, the crowds never got to the point of filling up the Nutter Center like they did at Hare. There were a couple of games that they did have big crowds out there, which, you know, was very nice and very loud and boisterous and all that. But while the amenities for the team were great out the Nutter Center, just the fact that you had this huge seating bowl that could not get filled like it did at Hera, you know, kind of was disappointing a little bit.
I forget if it was you that told me this, but I think the only time the Bombers sold out the Nutter Center was when Dale Earnhardt Jr. was in town.
Yep, and that was certainly was the case. And unfortunately, that was not when I was affiliated with broadcasting any of their games. But yep, that was the only one and only time.
It's such a shame, too, just because the Bombers, you look at their history at Hare Arena, and it was hard to get a ticket while they were there. But then they moved to the Nutter Center, which at the time, 5-6 years old, okay, maybe not built for hockey. It's more for basketball. You had to take out Section 200 of the stands. But at the same time, that was a nice new arena. And it's sad that it just didn't carry over to the other side of town.
Right, very sad. But I will state that the dressing room for the Bombers out there at the Nutter Center was unbelievable. Top shelf, probably on par with the teams in the NHL. In fact, NHL exhibition game out there, start of the 2000 season, It was the very first game played in the state of Ohio by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They were playing the Nashville Predators. And because of doing games on Time Warner TV, I was the play-by-play announcer for that game. And that is by far my favorite moment in all of my days of broadcasting sports, was getting to do an NHL game. Even though it was preseason, it doesn't count that way in my book.
Hey, it's an NHL game. NHL is NHL.
Yeah, I made it to the show.
I forgot there was an NHL game there. I knew that the Cleveland Cavaliers, did they play a couple preseason games during the days?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know, but it might be the case, yep.
But still, I mean, it's really, really cool. Kevin, are you familiar with the book Hockey in Dayton, A History of Pictures by Chuck Gabringer?
No, I'm not.
That's a book I recommend if you're interested. I got it off Amazon. But I think it's from that book where it mentions the Bombers were supposed to build like a practice rink where the Mills Morgan Pavilion is now. That's where Wright State's basketball teams practice. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, what would hockey be like if the Bombers actually went through with that and built that practice rink?
Well, I would think that it would have not have, they would have stayed out there. Of course, there was talk in the late 2000s, Costa Papisa, former owner of the Bombers, of putting an arena in downtown Dayton by the convention center. But I think they would have stayed out there. Now, would it have made any difference from a financial standpoint with the team? I don't know. I can't answer that. But it didn't happen. It would have been nice, but it didn't happen. And, and I saw the plans for that facility, but didn't materialize.
You know, I bet if that did happen, Beaver Creek would call that home, and that would probably be a very rockin' hockey rink. But
yeah.
Going back to the book again, I can remember a passage in there. Like I said, I recommend this book wholeheartedly because you're a proud Daytonian, and I love Dayton and the history on it. It's just they tried the downtown arena once before when the first Gems team was there, and it almost went through, and they would have been the Dayton Arrows, which is in the AHL, now known as the Iowa Wild. But what would happen to Dayton sports if we had an AHL team stick around?
Well, not to throw a monkey wrench in there, but did you know that that team was supposed to be in the World Hockey Association, which was a challenger to the NHL, and the Dayton Arrows franchise for the WHA moved to Houston, and family with the last name of Howe played down there in Houston. Gordy with sons Marty and Mark. And what would that have been like if Gordy Howe would have played in Dayton in the WHA?
I have no idea, but I could probably guess we'd have a lot more hockey to talk about back then. Yeah. But there you go.
Unfortunately, it didn't happen. And that, if I remember correctly, the thoughts and plans to build that were also incorporated into being an arena for the University of Dayton basketball team too.
What would that be like?
UD Arena is unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great place to watch a basketball game. You know, what would it have been like? I don't know. But anyway, that's one of those woulda, coulda, shoulda things. So,
I mean, if you think about it, the Flyers playing downtown, and that's not terribly far from the campus, but it's not terribly close like UD Arena is. Man, yeah. What would that be like? And would the Flyers have a new arena today if they went downtown? Because there's not a lot of teams that play downtown.
No.
That makes sense.
No, but a lot of people that follow University of Kentucky basketball team may not know that Rupp Arena is in downtown Lexington. It's not at the campus.
That's right. I forgot about that, but
so anyway, I think it would have been successful, and they would have, had the Red Scare crowd just like they do now at UD Arena.
Oh yeah. They're a loyal bunch. I mean, think about it though. If the going back to the downtown arena again, if, you know, the Flyers had a varsity hockey team, you know, battling with Miami and Bowling Green, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would. It would be. And, you know, forget Ohio State also playing college hockey as well in the state of Ohio. So
that's true. That's three foes not too terribly far away. So, but I can probably guess. I'll ask this question anyway. As someone that manages a paper, the one sport you'd like to cover and why?
Well, I would have to say, going back to, you know, talking about high school football, doing that for, you know, covering high school sports, it's been fun to do that. And being able to do it in for a community publication, that was really cool. And you know that not only are the fans of the team going to be reading it, but moms and dads, players, coaches, you know, all those people are going to be reading what you state. And if they feel like you've made a mistake or not said something the way they would have liked it to, believe me, they will let you know.
Yeah, I've had my fair share of that over my career as well. But so, I bet it'd be nice if you got to cover ice hockey, but the problem is, especially in that area, there's not a lot of high schools that carry the sport.
No, not here in Northwest Montgomery County. Now, it's big in Troy, Kettering, Beaver Creek, those areas, Springboro, but not over here this way. High school football and basketball, and even with the Brookville wrestling program's pretty big over this way too.
Yes, they are. They regularly have some great wrestlers in that Blue Devils program. They're in the Greater Miami Valley Wrestling Association Holiday Tournament, so I get to see some Blue Devils, and there's a couple that batted for championship spots, I remember, last year, last season.
With the Brookville Star, we have a wonderful contributor who, you know, does it gratis for us, covering wrestling, but Dr. John Rhodes, who's a dentist here in Brookville, and grew up over in Beaver Creek. In fact, he even wrestled at Ohio State, and his dental office is a shrine to Ohio State athletics.
Very nice. Does he have that same office with Dr. Valentine? Do you know?
No. They're two separate locations, but it's very close to where Dr. Valentine's office is, though.
See, that was my dentist back then, and, you know, there was some Ohio State stuff. I didn't remember if they shared the office or not, but that's pretty cool, and that's neat to have in Brookville, Ohio, US of A.
Yep. Doc Rhodes is what I call him. Doc. He is bleeds red and scarlet and gray.
You almost said red.
I know. I thought I said red. I'm sorry. I corrected myself there. But yeah, he's a big Buckeye fan. So anyway,
let's get back to your career. And it's a very long career. And this question is, you know, it covers a lot of people, but some of your favorite athletes, games, and venues as someone that has been in sport.
Well, venues with high school, and then just recently, a couple of years ago, doing college football, I've had the opportunity to broadcast in some big time college football stadiums and NFL facilities. Ohio Stadium, when I was broadcaster with WSWO out in Huber Heights doing the Wayne Warriors. And got to do it there. Also got to broadcast a game up at Fawcett Stadium up in Canton. I guess what it's Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium now.
Yeah.
But right there next to Hall of Fame. And also had the opportunity to broadcast a couple of times down at Paul Brown Stadium in Cincinnati. And then just recently, with a friend of mine, gentleman you know, Doug Brown, helping him with Central State University football broadcast, got to do a game over at Lucas Oil Stadium. Mm-hmm. Now, when we were over there, they put us in the same room where the TV cameras go into when they're, you know, there for an NFL broadcast. And it was four stories straight down to the first level.
Ooh.
And if you had vertigo, you were in trouble in that broadcast booth.
Yeah, four stories, man. Hope you're not afraid of heights. But then again, I guess it could be worse. I assume at Lucas Oil, they have catwalks up there.
Mm. Well, yeah, but we rode the elevator up and all that, so we didn't have to cross any catwalks high above the field.
Thank goodness for that. But that's still cool. You got to call a game there, the home of the Colts, and that was the Circle City Classic, wasn't it?
Yep. It was, and it was against Central State's big rival, Kentucky State.
That's a great rivalry, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Big rivalry, and it was just great being over there and, you know, not that far away and able to call a game from over there. So
those are some big time venues.
Yep. Big time venues. But I'll say too, not to, you know, answer something you didn't ask, but we're talking about the opportunities in games. When I was in college, I was broadcaster on the radio station at the University of Scranton. Mm-hmm. And I remember the call letters, WYRE, we're your radio's edge. And so sticks in my memory. But in my junior year, it was the spring of 1983. The University of Scranton played for the men's Division III national title. And it was played in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Calvin College and Seminary and Michigan. And got to go out there and broadcast that game. So I've got to call a national championship game at the college level and an NHL game. So those are two big good memories to have from broadcasting.
Let's swing over to baseball now. Mm-hmm. How did you wind up with the Dayton Dragons?
Well, a good friend of ours too in the broadcasting circles, Tom Michaels. He was, you know, good friends with Tom Nichols, who is the longtime broadcast voice for the Dayton Dragons. And Tom asked him, this is back, would have been the 5 years ago now, start of the 2016 season. Of course, you know, 4 years by calendar year, but five seasons ago. But they were starting to use a computer program to track the stats for minor league baseball. They had used this program. It's called the Game Day program at the major league level. It is all operated through Major League Baseball, though they have a staff assigned to the minor leagues now. But anyway, they were starting at the start of the 2016 season. And Tom Nichols asked Tom Michaels if he'd like to do that. And Tom said, you know, bowed out graciously, said that he just didn't think with all his scheduling that he could commit to doing that, and had gotten in touch with me and gave me Tom Nichols' phone number, called him up, and well, the rest is history. At the end of last year, completed year number four with the Dayton Dragons as the data casting stringer for the Game Day program.
And I can't think of any better way to lead off this question. What's a computer? I mean, what's a stringer?
Well, the information you put into the program, the input, of course, it's all what the official scorekeeper at the game states is, you know, how the result of the play is recorded and all that. You enter it into the computer into what is in tech jargon, I believe, a string. And you enter it all in. There's, you know, depending on the play, several steps you have to go into, and you enter it in, and that's where the term stringer comes in, because that's what you're doing. You're stringing in the information.
You know, I did question why they call it a stringer, and basically it's an online scoreboard. For those that can't make it, they can follow along on stats, like collegiate sports have nowadays, and maybe some high-end high schools.
And that's what the official box score for the game is generated from, and all the stats inputted. So it's pretty important that you get it right. And as you well know, if things don't look right or seem kosher, we get a visit up there in the booth to make sure we're told that it should be corrected.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's a great job. I mean, you and I work together, and you know, we have the official score in there, so we have three people, and we're pretty much right behind home plate at Day Air Ballpark.
Yeah, to be at a professional baseball game in the summer, you're working, you're, you know, earning a little extra money, and you're on a, you know, at a ballpark on a nice summer night, it doesn't get any better than that.
No, I mean, the last 4 years, we're talking about the Dragons making the playoffs in 2017, and that's the only playoff trip that we've seen Dayton do. But at the same time, I mean, there's been some good baseball at formerly Fifth Third Ballpark. Fifth Third Field, excuse me.
Fifth Third, yep.
That's West Michigan. Sorry. But, yeah, Fifth Third Field in Dayton. I mean, do you remember some of your favorite Dragons that you watched over the years?
I was very fortunate, of course, going back to the days with Time Warner TV. The very first year with the Dragons, the 2000 season, of course, that was a day with Austin Kearns, the team with Austin Kearns, Adam Dunn, et cetera. And we did a couple of games during Austin Kearns' streak where he hit, seven or eight games with hitting a home run?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool. Really cool doing that. And what it was they had a couple of the broadcasters that did games with another broadcast entity, but they needed somebody on the TV side to tell the truck. Now, the official term is Chiron operator. That's the program that puts the stats on the TV screen you see. Mm-hmm. And I would communicate with that person who was in the production truck, tell them, who's coming up to start the inning. They've done what throughout the game, et cetera, like that. And if there was a, official scoring decision or whatever, would pass that along. And that's what I did. That was the first year that for the Dragons, and got to spend that summer there. But those two guys, Willie Mopena, got to see him play there with the Dragons. And of course, most recently, Jose Siri. What a great run he had a couple years ago. How many straight games did he hit in to set the record? And Hunter Green, seeing the scoreboard flash 100 miles an hour plus when he pitched was unbelievable for a guy to be able to do that. So anyway,
I mean, everyone said that the 102 was the fastest pitch, but I can remember when Chapman was rehabbing in Dayton, and I swear he hit 105. And this is when the old scoreboard was still up and they only had two digits on the miles per hour. So it said 05. Wow. That's the fastest 5 mile an hour fastball I ever did see. But I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. I don't know. I thought. But, Jose Siri, who's no longer in the Reds organization, that was a former Dragon I enjoyed watching. There are many others.
We got to see Nick Senzel there with the Dragons.
Yeah.
Who figures to be prominent with the Reds this year. So,
absolutely. That 2016 season, there wasn't a lot of positive points, and the Dragons were only three losses away from 100 on the season. But at the same time, Senzel comes in and just, delivers that. I think they stuck him at third base primarily.
Yep, third base. Yep.
Trying to think of any other Dragons. Some that are still in the minor league circuit, and I think could be positive future Reds. I think Stuart Fairchild's got a nice shot. He's a great outfielder, good bat. Jonathan India, we saw, what was that, last year? Or was that the year before?
The year before.
I can't keep my season straight. I mean, this year would have been my 10th year with the Dragons doing scoreboard, but, we always said coronavirus kind of wiped that out. But did you see a while back that the Reds cut like 48 minor league players? And there was a lot of current of what should have been current and former Dragons. That was a lot.
Yeah, they unfortunately with COVID-19, there's been a lot of changes in a lot of industries and stuff. And with minor league baseball, there were a lot of players that were cut. Now, maybe coming up next year, some of those guys will, have a chance to play again. Well, that will remain to be seen. But it was sad. But, unfortunately, professional baseball is a business. And in any business, people do lose their jobs from time to time. So,
what's your take on minor league baseball shredding 40 teams coming next year?
That is going to be hard for a lot of communities. Mm-hmm. There was a great, I don't know if we're allowed to mention sports publication, but there was a great story. Sports Illustrated, is that okay to mention that?
Yeah, that's fine.
There was a great article back a couple weeks ago about the state of minor league baseball. And was talking about that very fact that there's communities and teams that are slated to be cut when they contract minor league baseball. But just for fans to note to listen to this podcast, I do not expect the Dayton Dragons to be one of them.
No.
When they mentioned in that story that the estimated franchise value for the Dragons is $45 million. And that's at the same level with teams at the AAA level. And there's very few AAA teams that have franchise values that high. And that just shows you that the Dragons, 20 straight years of nothing but sellouts, the connection that the Dayton community has to that franchise and the players over the years. For the communities that do lose their teams, it's going to be very tough because a lot of communities, that's the thing to do in the summertime. And it's going to be sad because, people losing jobs, not just the players, but people work at the stadiums, families that host players during the season. All that, it's going to be hard in a lot of places.
You mentioned already Dayton is safe from this axe, but there's a couple Midwest League teams that aren't. And I think all but one Iowa team is scheduled to get the axe. And I think Cedar Rapids is the only safe team. Clinton, Burlington, and Quad Cities are on that list of teams who get the boot out.
Yeah, I couldn't answer for that. I, don't know the list, but, quite possibly could be, and won't be 14 teams in the Midwest League come when they do get to play again.
I will also say, too, they're talking about reclassifying some of the teams as well into different, it'd be different classes, Class A. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't think of that word for a minute, but Dayton might get a chance to jump a level or two. Who knows? But
yeah, who knows?
The Dragons are here to stay in Montgomery County, and that's the nice thing.
Yep, they are going to be here to stay. So,
Kevin, speaking of sports, how has this coronavirus affected you?
Well, I mean, other than not being able to get out and do some of the things I enjoyed to do, one of the things that I do enjoy doing when I'm not involved with newspaper or broadcasting or writing about a sporting event is going to the movies. A friend of mine, we enjoy going to the movies and haven't been able to do that since March. And that's been kind of hard, but just getting through it, taking the steps we need to do to stay safe. I have not known anybody close and personal that's been affected by it, but I do know people who have, family members and stuff, and I feel for them and feel for what those people have had to go through.
Do you see the Dragons taking the field at all in 2020?
I don't. Now, I've not heard anything official stating this, but I could state probably with pretty good certainty that without having fans at the major league level, it would be very hard for the major league teams to be able to afford all the way down through what they'd have to pay to field minor league teams. So I don't see it happening at least this year. But next year, certainly do look forward to being able to go back to the ballpark.
Sticking with the same topic, do you see high school sports coming back in the fall?
Yes, I do. Just the very fact that the high schools are able to do conditioning for the fall and some of the winter seasons, maybe not competitively playing games like, you know, with basketball, with the AAU programs, et cetera, and a lot of youth baseball and softball leagues have had their seasons cut and stuff. But I do see high school sports coming back. Now, with what protocols in place, that I do not know. Will there be fans? Will there be, limits on attendance? Will there be, people being asked to sit every other row in the bleachers? I don't know. But I do see it coming back in the fall. To what it's going to look like, that I couldn't tell you.
And sticking with high school sports, like I mentioned in the opening, you are the managing editor of the Brookville Star. What high schools do you get to cover with the newspaper?
Well, here with the Brookville Star, of course, we cover Brookville High School, the Blue Devils. But we also cover schools in our regional area, which is Twin Valley South, Tri-County North, and Dixie out of New Lebanon. And also, too, we added in the Inglewood area to the Brookville Star coverage area a year ago. So we cover Northmont as well. And, we've got some good programs, and maybe not all the same sports, but good programs, good athletes, good schools and people to work with. Got good people here with the Star that do the sports writing, so.
It's kind of funny, the more north and east you go, the bigger the schools are. Because you mentioned South, North, and Dixie. Those are small schools in the Preble County and New Lebanon area. Brookville, and then Northmont, a very big school district up in the northern Montgomery County area.
Yeah, and know that district well because I reside in Inglewood, have since 2007, so... Good school up there, run by good people, good people that I know that run that school district. So
it's a very nice area too, Inglewood.
Yep, very nice area, very nice place to live too. So
I think it was someone that I worked at Wright State told me this, but Northmont is short for Northern Montgomery County, and once I realized that, it's like, whoa.
Yep, there were a couple different. Now, I don't know the exact history. I know there are people that do, but the exact history of that school district, but there were separate high schools for both the Inglewood Randolph Township schools, the old O.R. Edgington building, which was at an elementary school. It's no longer there, but the stadium there, that's where the Northmont youth football teams play. That was a high school, and then there was a high school in Phillipsburg. And I don't know when that was all combined, but to come with a common name that fit the area and all that, yep, Northern Montgomery County is how they got the Northmont.
When I realized that, it's like, whoa. I think on the history of the name, they took the colors from Randolph Township School, the Bobcats, and I forget how they got the Thunderbolts, but it's a really cool name, and it's probably one of the more unique names in terms of mascot names in Southwest Ohio.
Yep. Thunderbolt. It is a cool nickname and cool logo too, with that block end with the lightning bolt going through it.
I will say the football helmets, the last ones they had with the San Diego Charger bolt on it. Those are my favorite. The new ones, they're fine, but it's just the logo's kind of hard to see it in the dark. But
yeah,
that's me nitpicking on logos. But it does lead up to my next question. You're covering an area that's, you know, facing conference changes, Northmont. They lost GWACFO and Lebanon to the Eastern Cincinnati Conference. You know about the Cross-County Conference dissolving after 2020-2021. And the SWBL, the home of the Brookville Blue Devils, they're losing some of these schools to the Western Ohio Athletic Conference and the Three Rivers Athletic Conference. My question is, what is your opinion on all the changes in the conferences, and do you see it stopping anytime soon?
Stopping? I can't answer. But I do know that a lot of changes that have happened, especially with the GWAC, with the Miami Valley League forming out of that, a lot of that was based upon some enrollments. You had in the GWAC, you had a great enrollment disparity from your top level school all the way down to the bottom. And it was very unfortunate that, you had schools with enrollments, 1,500, 2,000 kids competing against schools that, may have had a couple hundred. Now, you like to say that really doesn't matter, but it does in some aspects, financially and size of programs and ability to have participants in your program. But it's changed. I remember back in the day when the Western Ohio League and the Greater Miami Valley Conference became the Greater Western Ohio League, or Greater Western Ohio Conference. They changed the landscape, much like, in college athletics, we've seen college conferences change over the years. It happens, things settle down, and you hope that, things can stabilize. I know back in my home state area, after I left high school, and it happened when I was still in college, but the league affiliations, specifically for the sport of football, all dissolved. This is when New York decided to adopt a state playoff system. Up until just recently, they didn't have a state playoff system. You played your 9-game regular season, and then if you were lucky, you played a playoff game or intersectional game against a team from another conference. And that was a sectional championship game, and that was it. But they adopted the state playoff system, and every year state championships in New York are played at the Carrier Dome, where the Syracuse University Orange play. Kind of neat, right in the middle of New York State to draw from. But they did away with football with conference affiliations and just went with sections. Now, of course, it's all predicated by enrollment size in Class A, B, C, D. But still in all, you don't have a league championship. You're playing for a sectional championship with that champion moving on then to the state playoffs. So there's different ways of doing it, but, looking back at my high school experiences and stuff, when I was a freshman, our football team and boys basketball team won league titles, and it was always cool to be able to say we were an acronym was called STAC, the Southern Tier Athletic Conference, but we're STAC champions. And it was kind of cool to be able to say that to friends or people you might meet from another community. So
what's your opinion on the changes that are going to happen? I mean, South, North, and Dixie are going to be in the same league in the Western Ohio Athletic Conference. Brookville staying put in the Southwestern Buckeye League, and Northmont's going to stay put in the GWAC.
From perspective with Brookville, they'll lose the longtime rivalry with Dixie. I mean, that is a long time rivalry. And in the basketball season, the start of every basketball season, they have a whole day in the early part of the month of December where you have the boys and girls varsity teams, the reserve teams, and the freshman teams from both schools all get together for a six-game day of basketball. And, you know, it draws people from all over the two communities, and New Lebanon and Brookville aren't that far apart, and it's kind of neat. But, you know, hopefully that tradition will be able to continue. You know, losing Dixie as a partner for Brookville, you know, it's going to be something that's going to be tough. Of course, Tri-County or Twin Valley South, they're going to stay together. So, you know, they've been rivaled. Of course, that's also a school district that used to be one school district instead of two many years ago. And you probably remember those days.
Well, I was born when it was already Tri-County North. I've heard the stories, and I think when it was just Twin Valley, all the athletic complexes were in West Alex. And if you lived in Lewisburg, that means you got that nice hike down 503 to get down to West Alex.
Yeah.
That's not a bad hike. It's just, you know, it seems kind of long because there's hills and farms, and that's kind of it until you get to West Alex.
But anyway, a lot of things with these conferences in the league or league affiliations, when they settle down, we'll see what all unfolds. But, you know, losing some traditional rivalries for some communities, that might be a little tough.
Hey, Kevin, what are some of your favorite things about sports in Dayton, Ohio?
Well, I will say that sports in Dayton, I can't remember the song, but there's a song, "A Town's Not Big, It's Not Small," but it's AAA or something. But, you know, Dayton, it's a nice, good size metro area, but you have the small community sports field with the minor league teams that have played here and I've been able to witness and be affiliated with too, and work and broadcast for and cover games. But you also have a major sports field too, with, you know, Cincinnati just down the road, with, you know, the Reds and Bengals, and then Columbus not that far away either, you know, with Ohio State. And, you know, of course, UD with the national following that they have with basketball and, you know, national games and teams that have come into UD Arena to play throughout the many years. So it's both got a small town feel and a big town feel to it. And I think that has its pluses on many levels. And, you know, it's a good sports community, too. One, people are very passionate, very knowledgeable about their sports. And let's just say that depending on which way you might sit in some rivalries, you do pay a little price when you might root for a team that may not be the favorite in the local area. And I have discovered that through teams that I follow in the college level and at the pro level. So
what would you like to see in the future for sports and media in Southwest Ohio?
Well, if I had my druthers, I would like to see the advent of pro hockey coming back to date. I think that this community can support it. I know that when the Bombers and the left and then the Gems left, there were talk that, you know, Dayton's not a hockey community. Well, if it's promoted right and done right and people are able to connect and follow it, I think that this is a good community for minor league pro hockey. We've had good followings with teams in the past. I think we can have it again in the future. So I would like to see that come back. As far as media, I mean, I think that, you know, we've got good television coverage of sports here in this area with the TV stations we have. Of course, being involved in newspapers, I think we do a very good job with not just the Brookville Star, but with AIM Media too, which is our parent company. I think it's been a good community sports wise. It's just one that I've enjoyed. And I will also say I'm very blessed and very fortunate to have been able to be a part of it and be able to work in it too.
For those that want to become a journalist or a broadcaster, what advice can you give?
If you have a dream, you know, don't give up. Try it out. If you want to be a broadcaster, you may have to look for some opportunities, maybe at your local youth leagues. You know, if they have a public address system, you might see if you can get involved with doing that. And I've done it with some youth leagues around the area, and it's very enjoyable. In fact, I had a young man just last week. I was out for a walk. I like to take a walk. I don't say I get to do it every day, but I like to take them very frequently. And I was out taking a walk just around uptown Brookville. And a young man, I didn't know who he was. I didn't really recognize him. He said, "Are you coming back to announce our games again?" And I said, for the Brookville Wee Devils youth football team. And I said, "Well, I hope to." And he said, "Well, you're my favorite announcer." I tell you what, that, you know, because I don't do it for myself, do it for the kids. And that just cemented for me, you know, why I do it. But, you know, if you got a dream to do it, give it a shot. Try it out. Look for different entities. You may not be able to do it in a traditional way right off the bat. Look for ways you could do it. And, you know, from a writing or journalism standpoint, if you like going to games, like to athletics, and your, you know, local publication may not cover your team, go to the editor or sports editor for that publication. See if they might want you to contribute a story from a game or from a school. May not be every single game, but, time to time or weekly or whatever, get your foot in the door, and see where it takes you from there. I did it back when I was a junior in high school. Of course, I was also sports editor for the school newspaper too, for 2 years. And, it's taken me 40 plus years, through the years and, here in the Dayton area since, 1992 of being able to broadcast sports. So it's been fun. It's been real. And I've met a lot of great people, including yourself, Lee, over the years doing it.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate the kind words. And to wrap up this episode, how can people follow your work and you on social media?
Well, social media, I'm on Facebook, but I will state, I don't know how to give out the logins for all that, other than, you can search my name. And if you want to become a friend, do it that way. We do have a website with the Brookville Star, brookvillestar.net. Our stories are posted there every week. So, that's how they can follow us if they want. And from a social media standpoint,
Kevin, thank you so much for giving me some time today and talking a little sports here on the Cincinnati Dayton Sports Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Lee, for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a lot of fun, Kevin. Thank you again, and that will do it. This is episode 166 of the Cincinnati Dayton Sports Podcast with Kevin O'Boyle, and we hope you'll join this podcast again for episode 167. For listening to another episode of the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast with Lee W. Mowen. To subscribe to this podcast, please visit theleewmowen.com, spelled T-H-E LeeWMowen.com, then click on podcast. From there, you can find your favorite way to catch new episodes of this podcast, such as on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, the iHeartRadio app, Pandora, and many more platforms. Follow along on social media by liking the Facebook page, the Cincinnati and Dayton Sports Podcast, and follow along on Twitter at CindayPod and the Lee W. Mowen. Feel free to send in future questions for Mowen's Mailbag on Twitter or Facebook. The closing theme was created with the Splash app, available for free on Google Play and the App Store. This is Lee W. Mowen signing off. Let's talk local Cincinnati and Dayton sports again on the next episode.